If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Being able to see some things that are important to you as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, as a real estate investor, and make sure that that partner has some of those similar qualities.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Joe Fairless is the co-founder of Ashcroft Capital, which has over $1 billion of assets under management. In addition to his work with Ashcroft Capital, Joe created the podcast, Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show, which is the longest-running daily real estate podcast in the world. Joe Fairless, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. Looking forward to our conversation.
Absolutely, man. It's great to have you on. Obviously, you're somebody who has gone from basically nothing in the real estate space to somebody with, I think you're what now, over $1 billion assets under management in a very short period of time, relatively speaking. So it's an honor to have you on. And I really, you know, just love the same question to ask everybody, you know, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
I started in Texas. We'll start with college. Started in Texas, major advertising, English minor, moved to New York City with $18,000 in student loan debt and the $30,000 job, which doesn't go very far in New York City. I was in East Flatbush, Brooklyn. For New Yorkers listening, for New Yorkers who are from New York, you'll understand what that comment means. For people who are in New York now but haven't lived in New York very long, you might think, oh, it's a up and coming area. It was not up and coming when I lived in East Flatbush, Brooklyn in 2005. Lived there for a year. My rent was about $750. My paycheck was about $750 every 2 weeks. So that math doesn't work out really well. Fortunately, I got paid twice a month. So I had $750 extra to pay for food and water and student loans and stuff. So needless to say, I didn't have money to invest out of college. I moved up the corporate ladder relatively quickly in advertising. I became the youngest vice president of a New York City advertising agency, ended up being on Wall Street. And eventually I was making $150,000 in salary, but I realized I wasn't fulfilled. So I wanted to pursue something else. I was about, I think like 28 at the time, 29 years old. And along the way, while I was climbing the corporate ladder, I had bought some single family homes with the money I'd saved. I kept my living expenses fixed. So I lived in East Flatbush, Brooklyn for a year. I lived in the East Village for 9 years. While I was in the East Village, all my friends made fun of me because I kept my same apartment. It was a 2-bedroom apartment, no living room, just a bathroom and a hallway and like a little nook area where there was a dorm style refrigerator. And that was about it. My friends made fun of me for living like a college kid, but you know, I was saving money and I was investing that money into single family homes. I got up to 4 single family homes, realized I wasn't actually making the cash flow that I wanted because someone would move out and turn that house over and to get it make ready was like $5,000, but I was making $250 a month. I mean, that math doesn't work. Mm-mm. So I decided I wanted to get into multifamily. So I read some books and, you know, that's what interested me in multifamily initially. And then ended up doing my first deal, which did not turn out well, which, you know, we can get into later.
Right. Okay. So and obviously you said you read some books. I mean, maybe you just have exceptional, you know, go out and do it. But you know, most people can't just read a book and then go buy an apartment complex. What did you do kind of in between even those phases?
Good point. Yeah, it wasn't as simple as just reading a book. Although I did read a book. I read Investing for Dummies, which got me into real estate. And then I read a bunch of books. I read Dave Lindahl's books. I read Commercial Real Estate Investing for Dummies. I read a lot of books. Equity Happens by the Real Estate Guys radio show or radio podcast. That I like that book a lot. More towards single family homes, but I like the concept a lot. So anyway, I read some books. Yes, I attend some seminars, but ultimately I didn't make a move for about 8 months while I was acquiring knowledge, working at my full-time job. And I ended up hiring a consultant or mentor during that time. And I was learning while I had my full-time job from this consultant. So the combination of the consultant and the books and some conferences I went to Rich Dad Poor Dad conference, and that combination of all that stuff, it gave me the confidence to, you know, go out and try it on my own.
Right. Okay. So you went out 8 months later, you bought your first apartment complex. Tell us kind of the things you learned in that process. How did that go? Was it awesome? Was it a complete failure? What happened?
Yeah. And just so I'm communicating the right like timeline, I had my full-time job and it was 8 months before I decided that I wanted to do it. And then once I decided I wanted to do it, it wasn't for another 6 months after that until I purchased my first apartment community. It took 6 months to find it. And I took about 4 months to find it and about 2 months to 2 to 3 months to close on it. So, well, that apartment community was a disaster from a investment standpoint. The Cliff Notes version is that I did not do the right due diligence going into it. I didn't know the difference between economic and physical occupancy. There were some shady things that an experienced owner was doing or experienced seller was doing that I would now pick up on. One example is he asked if I identified that units during a walkthrough, I identified that units needed to be fixed up. And so a part of the contract was those units had to be move-in ready whenever I purchased the property. Instead of them being move-in ready, what he ended up doing is working with a homeless shelter to get the people from the homeless shelter into the apartment in multiple apartments. This is a 150 plus unit apartment building. So there were about 15 or so units occupied by previously homeless individuals who didn't have high standards of living conditions. So they moved right into these apartments that were not move-in ready. Well, you know how the story ends there. They end up having to be evicted, and now the unit has to be turned in the proper way. And in some of those units, it was even worse than previous. So ultimately, my fault. I'm the guy who put this deal together, and I'm the guy who should have, even if that happened, okay, so it happened, but there's ways to protect against that prior to closing. Like, oh, you should look at those units that were newly leased. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff. Knowing what I know now, I do differently, but learned a lot of lessons on that. I lost money. I paid back my investors out of my own pocket, plus 14% annualized return out of my own pocket. Took a year and a half or 2.5 years. Memory's a little fuzzy on it, but I had 12 investors in the deal, gave a call to each one of them. I said, here's where we're going to net out and here's what my commitment is. And then I said, I'm going to pay you however much I can every month. I don't know how much it's going to be every month until your principal's payback plus 14% annualized return. And I did it. And have relationships for life. And, someone asked me previously, that's great for, especially you had your eye on the long-term business of it. Like, man, I didn't care about that. It's just, I wanted to be able to look myself in the mirror. I mean, I wanted to be able to have my name mentioned in their presence in the future and them say good things about me. Like right. That's the stuff that I cared about. And, sure. Yeah, it definitely helps. One of the investors has invested with me over 23 times since then. So, long-term relationships.
That's interesting. One, obviously keeping your eye on the long game is, part of this process. But for a new investor, someone that is scaling up the real estate portfolio and you go out and you buy it. And what was the total acquisition? What was the size of the project?
$6.3 million.
Right. So a good size project out of the gate, you as a new investor go out and it's a complete flop. I don't know that you could, make a worse flop out of the gate other than losing, large sums of money. So how did you retain, I guess, your resolve that, hey, this is the right asset class, I'm doing the right thing, and keep moving forward?
I identified the issues, and it was me, quite frankly. The issues were that I was attempting to do something brand new all by myself.
Mm.
I had a consultant, but you know, there was some misalignment of interests where he had introduced me to that property. I didn't find out until we closed on it that he got a referral fee for me purchasing the property. I basically was on my own, and I hired a property management company, but they weren't five star, but I certainly wasn't. I was like a zero star owner working with a three star property management company, not setting them up for success. So we know how that's going to end. So I identified, okay, here are the main components of the business. You got to have a deal, you got to have the money, and you got to be able to execute. Those are the three main components. I got a book. I wrote a book since then, and it talks about those are the three things. And I know what I'm really good at. I'm good at the money part, where you know I can see the business plan, but from an execution standpoint, I don't have that experience executing on the business plan. So I need to bring people onto my team who have alignment of interest with me, who have that experience. And same with finding deals. I am average at that, but in this business, in commercial real estate, you cannot be average at anything. You have to be at least good or better than that in commercial real estate, because you're dealing with experienced teams and sophisticated investors. So ultimately, I just looked in the mirror and I identified, hey, here's what I'm really good at, here's what I'm average at, and here's what I'm not good at. So I shouldn't be the one responsible for those things that I'm not good at or average at. And I need to find a partner or partners to get together with, and then we can grow. And that's what happens. That's what happened with our company. I met my partner, and we focus on some overlap, but primarily we focus on our areas that we have a specific expertise in. And we don't get in each other's way. We really complement each other.
Right. And walk us through. So during that 2.5 year period, you continued to buy other assets, and then you also found your business partner. How did that relationship develop?
Well, it was through a mutual friend, and my business partner, Frank. He was working as at a company that does what we do now, but he was a W-2 employee.
Mm.
He was wanting to get out. So he had that traditional, or he has that traditional experience doing asset management, doing underwriting, financial modeling. I did not. I was an advertising major. I had a more entrepreneurial background. So when he had identified an opportunity in Houston, but he needed some help with being able to get it to the closing table. So that's when I actually introduced him to a couple people, and they passed on the opportunity, I believe it or not. And so I got a little pissed, because I saw a lot of me in him, in that when he was getting started, people weren't giving him a fair shake. And so I said, you know what, this is a good opportunity. I looked at the deal, I looked at the numbers. Yeah, let's try and do this thing. And so that was our first deal. Bought it for 15.1 and appraised for 23.6 after 15 months of ownership, and sold it and did really well for our investors.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, I think that's one of the things that we commonly struggle with is the, development of those key partnerships. I think, a lot of us get out here, but we don't know how those are going to develop or how to even develop them. Because obviously we got to play to our strengths. And like you said, let others handle our weaknesses. When you and Frank first did this deal together, did you see this as a long-term relationship, or was it something like, hey, let's just do this one deal and then see what happens?
Do the one deal and see what happens. And then it works out. As clearly, we don't see any results from the deal in the short term, because that's not real estate. But when I say it works out, I mean the rapport that we have, the trust that we have, really the trust and rapport. In our communication styles, I call him right now, he'll answer. He can call me. I give him a little text that says, I'll call you back as soon as this interview's over. But
sure.
Like we are it's very important for me to be able to be in touch with team members and vice versa. So, you know, I think it's just that being able to see some things that are important to you as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, as a real estate investor, and make sure that that partner has some of those similar qualities. And, you know, if they do, then great. The beauty of this business is you can do a deal and exit stage right and not do another deal with the person. And that deal can, you know, still do well. You just didn't align with, you know, maybe, you know, your character or just communication style or whatever else. But if it does work out well, then you can actually use that first deal and build on it and keep building, you know, more momentum. And that's what we did. We've done 31 deals now.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. And so at some point along the way, you guys said, hey, let's go ahead and then start Ashcroft Capital. Or did you start that out of the gate when you did the deal in Houston?
It was not out of the gate. It was, I think I was Fearless Investing and think he was Value Add Investments. And Ashcroft was, I want to say, deal three or so, maybe deal two.
Okay. So it sounds like building, you know, finding some people with similar qualities, but different skills than you. And how did you guys define those roles? Obviously, you know, you kind of knew what you were good at and he kind of knew what he was good at. But I mean, did you guys sit down and just, you know, put your heads together for 30 days straight and say, okay, here's exactly what you're going to do and I'm going to do? Or was it just a very organic relationship?
Some combination of what you just described, but more towards organic. Certainly there was some conversation, but we both knew what we liked and the aspects of the business that we enjoy the most and those aspects that we don't enjoy. And, oh, what a coincidence, we're not as good at if we don't enjoy it.
Right.
So there was conversation, but it wasn't a 30-day thing. It was more kind of over time. Yeah, this is obviously what I'm going to be doing and obviously what you're going to be doing. And here's how we'll build it out.
Right, right. And you were able to do that, it sounds like, without completely getting on each other's nerves as you potentially overlapped, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the problem with a lot of partnerships is that there is overlap and you're not sure who's supposed to be doing what. And so nothing gets done, or one person feels like they're doing more of the work than the other. And then they feel slighted and they want more equity. And then they're wondering, well, what's the value of the other person if I'm doing this? So being clear on who's doing what, whether that's what, however that needs to take place for us, it was certainly, we've discussed it, but it just made a lot of sense. And it was assumed after, you know, after we were doing a deal, it's like, okay, well, you're really good at this. And I got some skills here.
Gotcha. So moving on from you and how Frank kind of built that, what were some of the, name three or four of the first key hires that you guys brought on in order to grow your business?
Well, I'm a huge fan of hiring an administrative assistant or an executive assistant as your first hire, because ultimately, as an entrepreneur, you are doing a lot of stuff that isn't worth the amount of time that you're spending on it. I mean, you should be focused on building the business, connecting with other people who could be influential. In your case, doing a podcast, building your foundation of the thought leadership platform. And you shouldn't be doing other things like scheduling calls and scheduling meetings and filling out this paperwork and doing this research project that someone else can do on an hourly basis. So that was my first hire. It was a right-hand person, executive assistant, administrative assistant, whatever you want to call the person. And I suggest that as a first hire. And then the next important hire, they're all important hires. The next hire, just chronologically, was director of acquisitions, because that freed Frank up to focus more big picture on the business versus going to chase deals. And he'll tell you that our director of acquisitions is better at it than he is. Now, Frank is supremely talented, but our director of acquisitions he's just incredible at what he does, and he specializes in it. So that took us to another level because of the right hire that took place. You know, it's a scary, you know, yeah, I'd say it's scary at the time, because if you're hiring quality people, then you're paying them good money and you're betting on yourself and the business, really, because, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, I didn't have any money starting out after college. So what I've made is what I've earned. So, you know, whenever you're building a business from scratch, you don't have the money to fall back on. So you're really betting on yourself, and not only yourself, but you're also betting that, hey, this business model that we're doing, oh, others are doing that and it's working out for them. So if I follow those similar steps, then it's probably going to work out for me. And if I do some other stuff that they're not doing that I know is proven to also do well, I think we've got something here. So, you know, we're hedging our bets too in that regard.
Man, so that's awesome. That's awesome advice on how to grow a team and just the things to look out for as you get started in this business. Let's jump into the final four. If you were to distill everything you know, and that's probably a lot as it pertains to commercial real estate, but distill everything you know down to one single piece of advice and you were giving it to an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
Service to many leads to greatness, Zig Ziglar, because the more, you know, with your podcast, you're serving more people, the more you serve, the law of reciprocity is a real thing. And the key is to find a scalable way to serve the right audience in the way that they can consume that content or consume that service or product that you have that adds a lot of value to their life. And, you know, when you do that, things work out. It's might not be how you envisioned it, but you keep serving people, you build those relationships, and it's going to work out.
Right. Oh, that's great. What's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
I am reviewing a 250-page book that is going to be published. And who knows? I've been working on it for 2 years, but sometime in the next 6 months, it's for passive investors, best ever passive investor guidebook, or I'm not sure what I'm going to call it by the end of this, but that's lots of interviews with investors on things that have gone wrong from a passive investment standpoint, going through the whole process of how to evaluate a passive investment opportunity. And just, you know, when you teach, you learn, it reinforces stuff. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Gotcha. And when it comes to giving back, what's one way you're making the world a better place?
Bestevercauses.com. I have highlighted and I've personally donated to over 35 nonprofits, and they're people who submit nonprofits that they want highlighted. So, you know, I live in Cincinnati, but we've promoted and I've personally donated to nonprofits in India and Philadelphia and all over the place, all sorts of different causes. And that's something that is, it's something that's quite frankly easy for me to do. So it's not that fulfilling because it's, you know, it's easy to donate $1,000 and it's easy to have my team put it up on the website, but it's something that I know makes an impact. And from a personal fulfillment standpoint and benefiting people volunteering, not right now for hospice because of the pandemic, but getting back into the hospice volunteering is something that's personally fulfilling.
That's awesome. And if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Depending on if you're an active investor, I've got a resources guide that will be helpful for you. You can email, or if you're a passive investor, I've also got something that will be helpful for you. So if you email info@joefairless.com, mention that you heard me being interviewed by Sam, and just mention if you're a passive or active investor, and we'll get you some free content that will be beneficial for you.
Awesome. Joe, thanks so much for the time. Certainly appreciate it. It was great having you on.
Enjoyed it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.